So I think we'll begin with a little review of what we discussed yesterday evening. What we discussed yesterday evening was the third line of the first verse of the invocation to Srimad Bhagavatam. Tejo varimridam yata vinimayo yatra trisargo mrisha. So, just to go back, also this muyanti yatsurayaha. I want to focus on three words, muyanti, and amrisha. First, muyanti means
illusion,
bewildered. It's an effect. Seeing something that's not, being under the deluding potency of Maya, one sees what is not. Something is there, but it's not what you see. It's not what you, the consciousness is false or illusory, muyanti. And amrisha means, it's also an effect. It appears to be factual, although it is unreal. But it's not only like, you know, the classic of you see the rope and it looks like a snake, and you see a snake and it looks like a rope, and you can't tell the difference when it accepts the thing that is not to be what it is. Appears to be factual. But so this is another dimension. This created realm appears to be real. In fact, it's just the opposite of how and the materialist sees, you know, this is real. This is substantial, the table. And your talk about spirit, it's insubstantial. Show me a spirit. And if I can't see it, then, you know, it's just your sentiment. That's the way that they look at things. This physical manifestation, the mountains and hills and trees and roads and cars and money and buildings and stuff, oceans, rivers, earth, that's real. And the other is just your imagination. What the Bhagavatam is saying in these verses, these two lines that we just covered, is this appears to be factual, although it's unreal, because of the effect of the deluding potency. The table exists, the mountains exist, the trees exist, and things exist. We don't say they're false, but they're not what they appear to be. And the deluding potency, in addition, covers reality. The reality is sat, or the lines that we're now going to discuss this morning, the final line. Dam na svena sadana rastakuhakam. The realm of the absolute truth, Krishna, his param dam, is sada, and it's nirastakuhakam. It's free from any material influence. There's no touch of matter there. That's the reality. We're not able to recognize that, understand that, perceive that, or live accordingly because of the deluding potency, Muyanti and Amrsha. So that's an effect. The deluding potency, one can say, is the cause, but there's something that's the cause of the deluding potency acting as opposed to the deluding potency not acting. And what's that? Behind that cause, there's a cause, and behind that effect, there's a cause. Behind that effect, there's a cause. And the cause is the living entity thinking that they're independent. So it's a double-edged instrument or sword. One is falsely thinking that we're independent. And that's we're card-carrying fools because we're thinking we're independent. If we weren't thinking that we're independent, we wouldn't come to the material world. We're thinking that we're independent, and we're thinking enjoyment independent of the one who is independent is possible. Not only possible, we accept it to be enjoyment when in fact we're suffering. I've been delightedly listening to Srila Prabhupada speak in his morning walk conversations, and they're so nice. I'm listening to them again, and one of the themes again and again and again is his use of the term fools by saying that the deluding potency is such that people accept that which is suffering to be happiness. And he gives a million examples. I mean, the common one is the hog. The hog is eating stool, and he's thinking, this is nice. And anyone that's been to Vrindavan sees the hogs eating stool. They're in the gutters with their snout going through the gutters, slurping up this abominable things. And their little tail is wiggling. They're really happy. To us, it's abominable. To them, it's happiness. And it's not just one man's food is another man's poison, that there's really some happiness there. That's not what happiness is. It's the deluding potency, thinking this is happiness. And as long as one is searching for happiness, whether it's in this mode, that mode, or the other mode, or combination, the deluding potency is acting. And what the prompt is our wishing to be independent of Swarat, the Supreme Independent. So, yesterday I mentioned there is a remedy. And it's a three-part remedy. Recognize we're not independent. That's a good beginning. And then next is very carefully hear from Srimad Bhagavatam the characteristics of the Supreme Independent. Try to understand Krishna, not by speculation, but by the process of hearing, and understand then he's the Supreme Independent and we're dependent. So the third step is surrender to him and engage in his devotional service. And when that happens, the curtain of Maya, the deluding potency, is taken away. And then one can see stuff, like, you know, the material manifestation, properly. And one can see the spiritual reality, properly. Because I was just in Mayapur before coming back to the U.S. conducting that very wonderful yatra. There are so many examples. I'll just refer to some of them from the mystery and the munificence of the Dham of Sridhar Mayapur. One of them, we visited the place of King Suvarnasain. And Suvarnasain was a really powerful king, very wealthy king, very pious king, but too much attached to fruitive activities. And even in his old age, he was still attached to fruitive activities, trying to increase, accumulate more wealth. So Narada took compassion upon him and visited the king. Being very pious, he received Narada very, very properly. So Narada kindly imparted transcendental knowledge. And he step by step dismantled the foolish notion that there's happiness to be found in fruitive activities. Step by step by step. And then he gave the alternative. Transcendental knowledge meant that if you take shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and engage in his devotional service, that connects you with that which is real. It connects you with the eternal self. This other accumulation of things has nothing to do with the soul. It's illusion. It's plain factual illusion. And the light went on for the king, and then he advised him. He said, actually, that where your kingdom is, in future yugas, because this was Satya Yuga, in Kali Yuga, the personality of Godhead will appear right here. And his name will be Gauranga. He described his qualities and his form and his activities and his personality, and just call upon his name Gauranga. And as he was describing the nature of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Narada just became ecstatic. And he got up and started walking away from the king. So the king was very moved, and his heart changed, and he began calling Gauranga, Gauranga, Gauranga. And he continued like this, and he became an ecstatic personality, and Lord Chaitanya appeared before him. And he fell at his feet. And Lord Chaitanya blessed him, saying, you will appear here, in this very place, when I come in Kali Yuga, and you'll take part in my pastimes. And he began to chant the holy name and dance in ecstasy. And when Lord Nityananda was describing this to Jiva Goswami, who he was there on visiting the places of Lord Chaitanya's pastimes, and Srivas Thakur was with him, Srivas fell to the ground, just in an ecstatic state, and started calling out Gauranga's name. And Jiva Goswami, similarly, just seeing the state of the ecstasy of Srivas Thakur, he also swooned in a state of ecstasy. And they began chanting very loudly, and Lord Chaitanya appeared with all of his associates, and they went mad. Just by that intense feeling-based shelter and chanting of the holy name, the curtain of Maya pulled back for Suvarnasain, and of course the ecstatic devotees, they experienced the same. Or another, so many wonderful examples. Another wonderful example was the evening in the kirtan of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, where the son of Srivas Thakur left his body right in the middle of the kirtan, in the back part of the house, because the kirtan was in the kirtan hall. The son had a very serious disease, and he died. And the ladies who were attending him started wailing and crying, and Srivas immediately left the kirtan and saw what the circumstance was. He imparted transcendental knowledge that the soul is eternal and this body is temporary and all souls are destined to pass on today or tomorrow, and what great fortune that our son has left in the midst of the chanting, resounding, ecstatic chanting of the holy name with Lord Chaitanya present and our household. He's so fortunate. If we could be so fortunate to leave our body in that circumstance, how wonderful it would be. But they were attached and they continued wailing and crying. So he took a different tact and said, you stop this. Or if you don't, I'm going to immediately go jump in the Ganges and drown myself, and then you can lament my separation too. And they sobered up, and he went back and joined the kirtan party. And it was going on for hours. And by Vedic custom, when the soul leaves the body during the daytime, before the sun sets, the body is to be burned. The funeral ceremony is to be performed. But nothing was done because Srivas had them all intimidated to say anything. And finally, Lord Chaitanya expressed, there's something not right here in the house. Has some calamity befallen some member of the house? They all looked at Srivas, and then they blurted it out. The son of Srivas has died. And Lord Chaitanya turned to Srivas and said, why have you not said anything? Everyone knows that the dearmost thing to any person is, besides his own life, is the life of his son. And you've said nothing. Take me there at once. And when he saw the circumstance, he said, Srivas, such love you have for me because you didn't want the kirtan to be disturbed. You said nothing about the departure of your son. This is unworldly. It's most extraordinary. Your love for me is so great. And he placed his hand on the chest of Srivas's dead son and said, my dear boy, just see the condition of lamentation that you've left your mother and father. Why have you gone? Please come back. And he came back. And he sat up. And he looked at Lord Chaitanya and said, who is my mother and father anyway? Something very, very similar to the King Chitraketu's son when he came back to life by Narada's touch. That I've had so many lifetimes, and each one I've had a mother and father. And the most recent one is this mother and this father. But that's been gone by your own divine arrangement, and I've gone to some other situation for my eternal father. And you've called me back. I want to be with my eternal father. He's my father. And he closed his eyes and laid back down again and left his body. And everyone was astonished. Due to the attachment to being the enjoyer of matter or some configuration of material circumstances, the deluding potency acts. When we become attached to the eternal, at least even in touch with the eternal, or better, attached to the eternal, then we can experience reality. And if we're attached, conversely, to the temporary, which means to be the enjoyer of the temporary, reality is concealed. And the deluding potency acts. Muyanti. Amrsha. We're under illusion, accepting to be real that which is not real. I'll just share something. There was being in the Holy Dham. This is a personal experience while I was there. Being in the Holy Dham and describing Lord Chaitanya's associates, wonderful kirtan, day after day and hour after hour and minute after, just totally absorbed in all of that, it had an impact. I mean, I'm sure it had an impact on everybody that took part in the yatra, but one day, Krishna's kindness, there were so many of those descriptions, the illusion of happiness through fruitive activity, that as we were, practically was the whole day, as we were driving along, going to this place and that place, the curtain of illusion was being pulled back, and seeing people diligently engaged in their fruitive activities, the shopkeepers and people tilling the field, and you know, the kids playing, and the dogs being dogs. India is amazing. You're just like lying in the middle of the road, like Hari Bol. I've never seen anything like it anywhere in the world. It's like a cultural thing. Dogs in India hang out on the road. Isn't it? I've never seen it anywhere else. I haven't been everywhere else, but I've never seen it anywhere else. And, you know, the cars go zoom, zoom, zooming by, and they're just lying there looking at the cars go zooming by. Like, nothing's happening. They've got their own culture of fruitive activities. And, you know, sometimes they yawn and step slowly out of the way as the car comes zooming by. Yeah. And there's a bunch of dead dogs on the road because some just didn't move. We probably saw 10 dead dogs in the road. Just maybe they would get it, but they don't get it. It's just like, I don't know. Anyway, all of those things, it's but illusion. I'll tell you a Prabhupada story in this connection. So, if there's something that replaces the illusion, what's there besides the illusion? And it's the reality. The reality is, here spirit souls that are engaged in fruitive activity under the influence of the deluding potency. Like Prahlad Maharaj, how unfortunate. What can be done to relieve them of this influence of the deluding potency? Accepting that which is not real to be real. Amrisha, under the whammy of the material energy, the deluding potency. The problem is their false sense of independence from he who is the supreme independent. So if you're Vyasadeva, what do? You write Srimad Bhagavatam. That's exactly what he did. He saw. And because he's a literary person, that's what he did. So what do? We don't go open schools and hospitals. We encourage and foster the activities of hearing and chanting. We do ourselves and try to engage others. We're going to hear about that in this morning's verse. Satam dharma protita kaita votra paramo nirmat saranam. Satam. Satam, nirmatsaranam satam, is one who is perfectly, Prabhupada says, 100%, 100% not deluded. That's satam. That's what a devotee is. Because only a devotee can be satam. Because otherwise one can be trying for that, but not there. And it becomes pure devotion, 100%. Satam. And what do when you're a 100% Satam? You try to create a society of God-centered people. And how do you do that? That was Prabhupada's assignment from Bhaktisiddhanta. You engage people in hearing Srimad Bhagavatam. That's what he wrote in his arrival prayer. Nashta prayeshu avadreshu nityam bhagavata sevaya bhagavati uttama shloke bhaktir bhavati naishtuki. Hari Sori told me this Prabhupada story once, or that happened. There were the devotees were riding on the Delhi Agra road. They're going either to Vrindavan from Delhi or back to Delhi from Vrindavan. And as they were driving, as it sometimes happens, just before them, they didn't see it happen, but there was a terrible car accident. What the cause was, maybe the driver fell asleep or something, and smash, and the car was smashed, and body parts were strewn outside of the car on the side of the road. And, you know, everyone, the driver and everyone, was looking out, you know, gawking, going, "Oh my God, look at that. Oh." And Hari Swami said, Prabhupada was just looking straight ahead, just chanting. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Now, on the one hand, but on the other hand, he's not callous. He isn't like, "I don't care because it's just illusion. People can go ahead and suffer. I don't care." He's not callous. He expressed and gave his life. He expressed his concern for persons who are unnecessarily suffering in this material world. It's unnecessary suffering. The reality is not the soul died. The soul just moves on to another situation. But the pain and suffering of some automobile accident isn't nice. It's awful. So, on the one hand, compassion for the suffering condition of the soul that his whole life was dedicated to alleviate. And then the other is this opulence of detachment from the particulars of the material existence. It's illusion. The wise lament for neither the living nor the dead because of being fixed in a spiritual conception. So there's different moods by coming from a transcendentalist at different times. So Prabhupada was exhibiting a particular mood in that circumstance. It's not possible to be detached as long as one is thinking of oneself as an independent enjoyer. And naturally, in the quality of goodness, compassion for the suffering of others. But where does that compassion for the suffering of others get properly reposed? On the soul. What can be done for the soul to relieve the soul of the soul's suffering? And it's not just, you know, making better roads, making sure people don't fall asleep and stay within the speed limit, and not just making adjustments. The Bhagavatam is teaching there is a permanent solution. So that's what's coming up. Dhamna svena sadana rasta kuhakam satyam param dhimahi. Bringing one's attention to the eternal reality of the Lord, his abode, his devotees, his loving activities with those devotees. The whole of the spiritual world opens when one satyam param dhimahi. But those that are unwilling to do that, muyanti yatsurayaha tejo varimridam yatavinimayo yatra trishargo amrsha. And even they can read it and, you know, hear the explanation and contemplate it. Like, you know, the reality of a dream is something that we don't accept. But when one is asleep, the reality of daydreaming is something we just completely forget. So this is as much of a dream, the waking condition, as much of a dream as a sleeping condition is a sleeping condition. Or an illusory condition. But there is another reality. The message of the Bhagavatam is to take us out of illusion and into reality. Something that we heard Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur say is the last two lines. So yesterday evening we discussed the first of the last two lines, and now we're going to be discussing the last line. These two, the second half of 111 Bhagavatam, is an explanation of Vedanta Sutra. In summary, starting with Satyam Param Dhimahi, I meditate upon the absolute truth, the cause of all causes, the personality Godhead, because this last line, he's existing in his eternal abode that's free from illusion. At the same time, he's the source of illusion for those who are averse to him, thinking themselves to be independent enjoyers. And then the other just review point in the third to the last line, vinimayo, just to review that one again. Vinimayo means action and reaction. And we discussed yesterday twice Vyasadeva's teaching of Shakti Parinama Vada, the doctrine of the transformation of energies. Parinama means transformation. So vinimaya means the same, action, reaction. We don't see it because the hand of the Lord is there. How the whole thing happens is inconceivable, because the potencies of the Lord are inconceivable. In Bhaktivinoda Thakur's writing, just a little sharing here, Bhaktivinoda Thakur taught the teachings of Lord Chaitanya to people who were illiterate by songs, because they could learn songs, and then within the songs it was built in the message of Lord Chaitanya's teachings. And then he also, in a very, very, very simple form, he taught by question and answer method the teachings of Lord Chaitanya to a village elder or leader, Shrestha, someone that was literate, and then the literate person can teach to the illiterate persons in the village Lord Chaitanya's teachings in the question answer format. So one of the ten essential teachings of Lord Chaitanya is the Lord has unlimited inconceivable potencies. So he would make that statement. One of the essential teachings of Lord Chaitanya is that he has unlimited inconceivable potencies. Question. What are those inconceivable potencies? Answer. There are three main categories: internal, external, marginal. Could you explain what are each of those three and describes 1, 2, 3? And then the question is, you've explained this so easily, it seems quite conceivable. Why did you call it inconceivable? Answer. When the energies mix, we don't see this energy, that energy, the other energy, because they're mixing. Therefore, they're inconceivable. So this explanation of vinimaya, of how water appears to be in a desert, or water appears to be in a fire, or land appears to be in water, how it happens, it's not clear how it happens, other than it's a deluding potency. But it comes about by action-reaction, the Lord moving, manipulating, transforming, cause and affecting his own energies to bring about a certain result, the deluding potency result. And then the second just review point is several of our acharyas speak the same thing, that is, the deluding potence, just like a reflection of an object takes its, or a shadow or reflection of an object takes its shape and form because of the object. That which has substance creates the appearance of substance and the reflection or the shadow of that substance. That's easy. Similarly, because there's spiritual reality, it appears that the illusory presentation is real. The strength of the appearance of reality is drawn from reality, which is very important in understanding Krishna, and similarly understanding why this looks real when it's not real. Well, like scripture says it's not real, but hey, you know, there's a table, and so on. It looks real. And, okay, I've bought into the illusion. I can theoretically accept that, but how do I, you know, get out of the illusion? Because it seems to be real. I'm under the deluding potency. And, again, the same, we're not independent enjoyers. That's one. That means I'm dependent. And upon whom am I dependent? The supreme independent. Okay, what's the nature of the supreme independent? By the process of hearing, one, two, three, we're hearing Sambandh again in this initial verse. That hearing checks our sense of being independent and understanding through hearing the supreme independent. And then the process of devotional service, which is what the next verse is, 112. Okay, so that's just review. Let's chant the verse. We'll cover the last line. Together we'll chant. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Janmad Yasya Yaton Bayad Itaratash Charteshu Abhigya Sorat Tene Brahmahridaya Adikavaye Muyantiyat Sorayaha Tejovari Mridam Yatavinamayo Yatra Trisargo Mrisha Dhamna Svena Sadhana Rastukuhakam Satyam Param Dimahi. So we'll go right now to the, there's three parts. Dhamna Svena Sada means I therefore meditate upon him, Lord Sri Krishna, who is eternally existent in the transcendental abode. So, dhamna comes from the same root as dham, his abode. The statement dhamna, which is sada, eternal, affirms that because he's situated within the spiritual potency that's not touched by illusion, that's his identity, that's his reality, that's his position as one of the features of the absolute truth. Remember this metaphor of the spokes of a wheel going to the hub. So he's the absolute truth. Because he's the absolute truth, we can correctly assert his abode is eternal. Eternal is different than temporary. It's not manifest and sometimes not manifest. It's eternal. It's eternally existing. It doesn't come into being like the soul. It doesn't go out of being. There's not more of them created. It's his eternal abode. That's by the influence of his spiritual potency. And that's where this word svena means self-sufficiently. He doesn't rely upon anything else or anyone else. He manifests his dham. But it's not like once upon a time he didn't have a dham. And he looked around and said, gee, this is boring. I need a place. And then he made a place. It's not within time. It's eternal, like this discussion yesterday about infinity. Eternal. Sada. By his own potency, Svena, he has this Dhamma, and he exists there, and his Dhamma implies all of his paraphernalia, all of his associates, Govardhan Hill, the river Jamuna, the cows, Mother Jasoda, Nanda Maharaj. That's the place. The place is not complete without everything. And everything is manifest eternally by his own spiritual potency. It's a different place than this place. Srila Prabhupada writes, in Bhagavad Gita, the Lord says that there is no other paratattva or summum bonum than himself. Therefore, Sri Vyasadeva at once worships the paratattva, Sri Krishna, whose transcendental activities are described in the 10th canto. This Srimad Bhagavatam will gradually elevate the unbiased reader to the highest perfectional stage of transcendence. So it's the satyam param dhimahi, that meditation, fixing our consciousness upon satyam param, or the absolute truth, that carries us to the realm of Krishna. Just exactly what we're doing. Somehow, if our dull, hard-heartedness can become softened by the transcendental sound vibrations glorifying the position, the Swarup Lakshana of the personality of Godhead, the absolute truth, the illusion can be pulled away and gradually come to the perfectional stage by the very process that we're engaging in. A little appreciation about this term summum bonum. It's a Latin term that's the equivalent of our English term, the absolute truth. So, satyam param is the Sanskrit term. Summum bonum. The implication of summum bonum is, this is not new, you've heard this, but to say it again, the summum bonum is the source of everything. That's the absolute truth. And summum bonum is a person revealed in this verse and in the whole of the Srimad Bhagavatam, but even specifically within this verse. He has a name, he has a form, he has an abode, he has paraphernalia, he's a person. The absolute truth is a person. And he has inconceivable potency, so he can manifest whatever he likes. He can manifest copies of himself, or he can manifest living entities, or he can manifest material worlds, and he can manifest deluding potency, he can withdraw the deluding potency, he can do whatever he likes. Because he's a person, a supreme person. And as this verse is saying, he exists there eternally. And we belong there. We're part of that summum bonum, the absolute truth, the personality of Godhead. But we blew it. We misused our free will, and here we are struggling for happiness through fruitive activities. It's an abject waste of time. And it's miserable. And we're accepting the miserable as nice. And so someone can just go mad and do something terrible to hurt others or hurt themselves out of frustration with material existence. That's the mode of ignorance. That's not recommended within the scripture. It's not an acceptable solution. It doesn't bring a solution. It's just another binding feature of material existence. The Bhagavatam is providing us. Just take shelter of the lotus feet of the first and second canto, the literary form of the personality in Godhead, and here again and again and again and again and again and again and take shelter there. Realize our dependence. Realize the supreme, independent. Take shelter of him in devotional service through this process of hearing. Just touch a little bit on the metaphor of the spokes of the wheel. This dhamna svena sada is an aspect of or a feature of the absolute truth. Because he's the absolute truth, he exists eternally. It's kind of self-evident, but it's stated. He exists eternally, and he exists eternally in a place. And all paraphernalia exists eternally in his transcendental dham, and he's engaged in his tatastha lakshana, his wonderful activities, and he exhibits them. And then he withdraws them, and he's enjoying. Through the agency of his own potency, he's not relying on anything outside of himself for his enjoyment. Then there's a temporary creation, Trisargo. And he expands that Janmadiyasya, he expands that other realm for those who declare their independence. They misuse their free will, and he gives them something to do. And he gives his shadow potency, Maya, something to do. Keep them busy. They wish to do something, stay busy. So they stay so busy they don't have time for devotional service. We hear it all the time. Can you come for our program? Oh, I'm too busy. Isn't it? Can you take up chanting? Well, you know, I don't have time. And it's true, they don't have time because they're so busy with illusory activity. That's the nature. It's the nature of Krishna's potency. Prabhupada writes and describes it specifically in Ishopanishad. The nature of this world is such that those who are rebellious are given so much to do, they don't have time for anything other than their illusory activity. And they'll tell you, I don't have time. And it's true, they don't have time. They're so busy. But all it takes is to change the attitude and say, somehow I'll make the time. We all went through this, you know, just to initially begin something, some chanting or whatever it is, some devotional service. And when we take that step toward Krishna, the time energy acts differently. There is time. And we think, well, you know, will I be able to chant 16 rounds? Well, I'm so busy. We hear it all the time. You know, then there's all this discussion about balancing material and spiritual activity. Let your whole life be for Krishna. And there's time, because it's the internal potency and it acts differently than the external potency. But the external potency got you around the throat. You don't have time. But there is an option. The internal potency. Dhamna svena sada narastakuhakam. So that's narastakuhakam. That dhamna svena sada is forever free from the illusory representation of the material world. So here's a little definition section. Kuhakam means that which bewilders, like Muyanti. Sounds familiar. The Maya potency which covers the real forms of the individual spirit souls and throws them into the material world. This is indicating, don't want to get, the covering potency and the throwing potency. Prabhupada writes about this in Chaitanya Charitamrita, avaranatmika shakti, prapekshatmika shakti, throwing the living entity into the material condition and then covering the living entity. Two different features of Maya, double whammy. And then accepting it as real, amrsha. So dhamna is the alternative. That potency of his own glory, or svena, it's his own power. And sada, it's always manifest. And narastakuhakam, the power of maya can't enter there. Because this is internal potency. Just like where there is light, there can't be darkness. Simple. Where there's light, there can't be darkness. And this is spiritual light. There's no darkness. There's no illusory energy. There's no time. There's no modes of nature. There's no karma. It's perfectly pure. Srila Prabhupada writes, there appears to be reality, however, because of the true reality which exists in the spiritual world, where the personality of Godhead eternally exists with his transcendental paraphernalia. So, just read, Krishna's abode, the place where he performs his eternal pastimes, can be distinguished from this world by its absence of material illusion. The Srimad Bhagavatam is meant to free its hearers from the tinge of material consciousness so they may enter Krishna's abode. That's why we're doing this. And once again, this is foundational. Later on, the Bhagavatam, because it's Purana, it says the same thing in history of those that have become freed, those that become entangled. And all centered around these points of discussion that we're presenting here. Then finally, Satyam Param Dhimahi. This is our... We've been speaking so much about this one. Here in the prayers by the demigods to Lord Krishna in the womb. It's Canto 10, Chapter 2, has a nice name. Garbha Stuti. Stuti are the prayers to Lord Krishna in the womb. Garbha Stuti. And look at how many times Satya is in the verse. Satya Vratam, Satya Param, Tri Satyam. Satyasya yonim nihitam cha satye. Satyasya satyam rita satyanetram. Satyatmakam tvam sharanam prapana. In case you didn't get it the first time, there's eight more times. You, the demigods are saying, are the supreme truth. I'll read. O Lord, you never deviate from your vow. Satyavratam, which is always perfect because whatever you decide is perfectly correct and cannot be stopped by anyone. Being present in the three phases of cosmic manifestation, Tri Satyam, creation, maintenance, and annihilation, you are the absolute truth. Now here's how the Bhagavatam, in one of the Chaturshloki verses, says the same thing in a different way. The very first one. Before the cosmic creation, I alone exist. During the period of cosmic manifestation, I alone exist. After annihilation, guess, I alone exist. That's the nature of the absolute truth. Krishna is declaring this to Lord Brahma in the first of the Chaturshloki verses of Srimad Bhagavatam, which was manifest in his heart. Tene Brahma Hridaya Adikavaye. The absolute truth is everything. So that means all of his various energies, including the energies of creation and the spiritual potencies and his own existence and the soul's existence and everything. Again, there's Krishna, and there's Krishna's, and there's not a third thing. He's the absolute truth. In the last chapter of the 12th canto Bhagavatam, chapter 13. Again, satyam param dhimahi. I meditate upon that pure and spotless, supreme, absolute truth. Satyam param dhimahi. In Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary, he presents the dictionary definitions, plural, of dhimahi. And he points specifically to one that says prayer. So beyond meditation, which can be something neutral, prayer is more active. It's a supplication, a sense of dependency. It's a mood of calling for one who one accepts as one unto whom I am dependent. So there's a prayer. Like, you know, it's kind of like the court language. There's a petition or a prayer before the judge. You know, the one who is harmed offers a prayer to the court. Isn't it that language in India? So you're asking for something from one who is in a position to give that something. You're a prayer for relief, injunctive relief, or different things they call it. So dhimahi is a kind of prayer. It indicates a mood with which one should meditate upon or call upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And it requires two things. That which is illusion, please remove it. And my attachment to the illusion, please remove it. Just like Devahuti prays, she petitions, she requests her son, Kapiladeva, please remove your deluding potency, which I'm attached to, the sense of identification with the coverings of the soul, the body, the family, my position. Please remove your deluding potency. Those things that we're attached to, if we don't have this willingness, we'll maintain those attachments. If we have a willingness, we're praying to the Supreme Lord, please remove that deluding potency. And please allow me entrance into your spiritual potency. It's an active process. The process of devotional service is an active process. The process, just like, say, chanting Gayatri Mantra. We can chant Gayatri Mantra, kind of just go through it. Okay, this prayer, that mantra, then we're done. Okay, next. Or chant our japa like that, or live our life like that. Even a life in devotion. If there isn't an active component that's eagerly jigyasu, tato brahma jigyasa, eagerly inquiring, reaching towards the absolute brahma or satyam param, taking shelter, actively taking shelter of the personality of Godhead. So I'm going to go one more time to this message I presented before. The call it immature and mature stage of devotional service, or joining the Hare Krishna movement in the mind and not in the heart. So in the mind, then I accept, because that's the function of the mind. I accept sankalpa vikalpa. I accept the activities of devotional service, and I'm going along dum-di-dum-di-dum-di-dum-di-dum, just doing my devotional service mechanically, not from the heart, not with a clear understanding, because I feel good. Make me feel good. Make me happy. Like one person was describing his participation in a Bhakti Vriksha class, and he really liked it. One was, he started understanding Bhagavad Gita unlike he had ever understood Bhagavad Gita for like 35 years of his life taking Bhagavad Gita study groups. He started understanding Bhagavad Gita for the first time. He felt good about that. And then another thing he felt good about was his anger was subsiding. He wasn't like trying to get rid of his anger through the, you know, the leverage of Bhagavad Gita. But it was happening in the workplace, in his home. That which had been with his life for years was just dissipating. So he felt good. But supposing the pendulum starts to swing in another direction. Some circumstance that's challenging, some calamity, something. There's always something. And supposing that something starts, and then what? If you join the Hare Krishna movement in the mind, and the kaleidoscope moves and the picture looks different, then something else might start to manifest other than enthusiastic devotional service. You know, whining and complaining and, you know, grumping and etc. Then fault finding and etc. So what's the cure? It's taking up devotional service from the heart. But hey, that's work. It's brahminical work. It's not, you know, ugra karma. It's brahminical work. But to be a devotee, to be fixed in devotional service, there has to be brahminical work. That's good. The mode of goodness is promoted by brahminical work. We can't be lazy, can't be complacent, can't be coasting and just wait till the next pinch comes along and then I think, oh, I guess I got to start surrendering to Krishna again. Hit the reset button and stop being complacent because I don't like to suffer, so I'll be more diligent now, at least for a while till things get nice again and then I'll check out. That's going to come up when we hit our after breakfast session and the next verse, Dharma Prodita Kaita Votra. Oh, you'll hear it again. But it would make the life of a sannyasi, myself, so much happier if our devotees did that brahminical work and got it. Not just accept it and go along with it. And, you know, the persons that I'm speaking to are the ones that are doing that brahminical work, and other persons are beside the ones that are on, you know, online, persons that are whatever, doing something else with their time and energy rather than, it doesn't have to be this particular form of hearing and chanting, but other forms of other activity that are in pursuit of happiness through fruitive activity, while carrying on with devotional life. They go ill together. Prabhupada says it in Bhagavad Gita this way. Pouring water on a fire and lighting a fire, they go ill together. Pursuing happiness, similarly, through fruitive activity and trying to advance in spiritual life, they go ill together. One has to, without commitment to the process of hearing and chanting, and that means not occasional and spotty, but a sustained commitment. And to do that, gee, there's like so many other things pulling on our attention and time, and, you know, there's the mode of passion and there's the mode of ignorance. There's complacency and there's other things grabbing our attention. So to stay with the quality of goodness takes a commitment. And, you know, God only knows there's a paucity of the quality of goodness in this world. So what are we going to do? And so there must be some commitment to Krishna, to the purpose of life. And how do we know the purpose of life? Through sadhus. That's what Kapila Devi says to his mother. This is our last year's seminar here in Thanksgiving time. Sadhu Sangha, my dear Mother Devahuti. The same attachment that goes to material things and material happiness and material relationships. Just transfer all of that to sadhu. And then the door to liberation opens. You get that relief from material entanglement that you're looking for, and the door to spiritual life opens. So there are these two things. Letting go and accepting. You let go of those things that are not favorable to devotional service, and you accept those things that are favorable to devotional service. That's the first two principles of surrender, according to Padma Purana. There has to be willingness. What's the fuel in the tank that's going to keep you going? It's the fire, the flame that says, I wish to be with Krishna. Not just, I don't want to suffer. Because if that's the motivation, when the suffering diminishes, you check out. Business as usual. Complacency. Comfort zone. I'm feeling comfortable. That's not what happiness is. That's the deluding potency. The reality is something else. So it really, one has to capture that. And largely we don't. Something. But largely we don't. So therefore a commitment to this practice of purification, this sadhana bhakti commitment, just as we're doing now. I mean, you're all busy, just as I am. And here you are, just as I am. And that there's a commitment to be here, because I don't even know how many hours I've spent preparing. That's not just getting the information straight, but entering into the mood of what Vyasadeva is presenting in these invocation verses, so that I could transmit that in the best way that Krishna gives me the ability to do that. It's been a challenge, because I just came from India with a whole other one, the Yatra. And then, va-do-pa-da-boop-a-dee-boop, and here we are, just doing another one. It's been a challenge. But I'm happy to be with those of you that are also, you're busy. I know your lives. You're busy. And here you are. You know, yay! That commitment will help you, sustaining that commitment will help you leave behind illusion and enter into a spiritual reality by the process of hearing and chanting about Satyam Param Dhimahi. Okay, so I think that covers it for this morning. Any comments or questions?
Maharaj, there are a couple of questions online.
Okay.
First one is from Raghunandan Prabhu. He has a couple of questions. The first one is, not being callous to the unnecessary suffering. As one is trying to make advancement in the spiritual life, sometimes there is a tendency to become dry without compassion. It is because of trying to practice Krishna consciousness on the intellectual platform, or is it the fear of getting entangled or attached, or a combination of both?
A combination of both, under the heading of immaturity. Like Prabhupada speaks of, well, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur speaks of in his description of anishtita bhakti. In the beginning stage, there's a false sense of having attained something. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur gives the example of a student that enters school and feels, I've mastered all my subjects. And they're just entered school. Utsaha mayi is the Sanskrit phrase. Utsaha, we know, enthusiasm. Mayi, we know, false, illusory. Utsaha mayi. So in the beginning, the immature stage of devotional service, one is trying to get out of the entanglement of material existence. It's reactionary. It's the pendulum goes this way kind of thing. Immature. And so I'm renouncing. One becomes callous. to things that are of this world because I want to go to the other world. Without seeing what the responsibility and possibilities of devotional service are for things within this world. It's an immature stage. So, yes to both options of what he said. It's just intellectually trying to, or mentally trying to, become advanced, get disconnected from the entanglements of life. And it's artificial. It's not sustainable. Something else?
Yeah, there's a second question from Rajnandan Prabhu as well. The question is, Tejo Vari Vritam, Srila Prabhupada in the translation says, by him, even the great sages and demigods are placed in illusion, as one is bewildered by the illusory representations of water seen in fire or land seen on water. In Canto 3, Kapil Muni explains that from sky there was sound, then from sound there was air, then from air there was electricity or fire, then from electricity there was water, and from water there is land. Are these two statements referring to the same point?
Yes.
Of illusion, that is the material creation?
Yes. In fact, the word vinimayo is the tool that the personality of Godhead is using. Kapila Deva is describing the unfolding of the elements. That's this Trisarga, the element, the subtle form of an object before even there's objects, the sense of perception, and the organ of perception. We discussed that yesterday. And so through that Trisarga, there is some mutation or transformation or cause and effect or, you know, vinimaya. And so because of that, the manipulation allows, by Krishna's potency, that we see something that's not what it appears to be. So like a mirage, something appears to be real. And the whole thing is like, not just there's a mirage in the desert and the rest is real. The whole thing is a mirage. The whole thing is not real. And by the manipulation and transformation of his energies. So the answer is yes. That those two statements connect with one another.
Thank you, Maharaj. There is one more question online from Yashoda Prema Bhakti Mataji. How to be a substantial devotee and not a circumstantial devotee?
Well, that's what we've been speaking about. In one word, commitment. And then with following commitment, the right process, connecting with the right sources, and sustaining that commitment over time. That's how. Without commitment, it won't happen. When there's commitment, Krishna will send the resources. Even if I think, oh, I don't have the resources. Something. I'm in this place, and there isn't somebody, and da-da-da-da-da-da-da. You know, there's always the whining of the mind that says it's not right. I can't connect with Krishna because. But when the commitment is there, the resources are there. One can, one at least may, take arrangements to take this circumstance and connect with, you know, take the resources and make the connections with those resources. But Krishna will provide the resources, is the point. That's how to go from the conditional or circumstantial to substantial. Anything else?
Hare Krishna, thank you for my question is, when our family members are suffering...
When you're what?
When our family members, suppose back in India...
Family members back in India.
Yeah, religious family members when they are suffering. Because of some attachments, we also get affected.
You're attached to them or they're attached to you?
Both.
Both? So you become affected when something happens over there.
What is the role of a sadhaka, or what is the duty, and
also moon? What should a sadhaka do when there's those attachments over there? That's the question.
And also, what is my duty?
What's your duty?
I don't want to be callous, or I don't want to be impersonal. I want to feel gratitude towards them. And also, at the same time, I want to...
Well, I can think of three things. Foremost is become a pure devotee. And that's the best service you can do for those who you are attached to. You understand that, right? Well, however far away it is, make it your project, your foremost project. Supposing you don't become a pure devotee, so become, you know, you're a mediocre devotee. Whatever that is that you attain spiritually will go to them. There's many scriptural verifications of that statement. Whether you're feeling attached or not, it will go to them. Simply because there's a bodily connection. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said that to Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya about his son-in-law, Amogha. Simply because he's related to you by marriage. It wasn't even a blood relationship. It was his son-in-law. Because he's related to you, he gets benefit from your Krishna consciousness. Anyway, there's many other examples. Another, like, what's my duty and what I do about the attachment? That's the two-part question. In terms of thinking how you can best be of service to them, think on the platform of the soul. Meditate. See them, not just as my relative, but the soul. And what can be of benefit to the soul? You're contemplating like that. Will do a number of things. It will free you from the bewilderment of being attached and then thinking in terms of attachment what to do. And it just leads to more bewilderment. Nor does it lead to real benefit. It just like makes the situation worse. It magnifies illusion. So think on the platform of the soul. And what can be the benefit to the soul? By thinking like that, another thing will happen. Some intelligence will come of what can be done on the platform of the soul. Now, what might apply to another person and you in another situation, and, you know, there's diversity. But, it, you know, thinking like that will protect you from illusion and bring you closer to the position of knowing what to do. Because each situation is a little different. Huh?
Are we supposed to
preach
anything?
It depends. Better is the third point. It's actually kind of the second point still, but by your becoming very happy and nice qualities, etc. Those relatives, seeing that, will sit up and go, wow, I don't know what she's doing, but it's good. They may not do it themselves, but if they go, wow, that's good, whatever it is, they make spiritual advancement just by that appreciation. It's devotional service because they're appreciating Krishna. So, better than preaching is achar. Develop and conduct yourself with proper achar, behavior, quality. That's powerful preaching. It's more powerful than preaching. Prabhupada said, achar is better than prachar. So think in those terms rather than the other one. Like something. Be good. From a vantage point that they'll understand is good. Like, you know, be a good daughter or sister or cousin or whatever. Be good.
It's not selfish.
Huh?
It's not selfish. If they look, it is selfish.
No, you're helping them to appreciate Krishna. That's still, we're on the number two. You're like, what can I do to help them on the platform of the soul? If they appreciate Krishna, that will help them on the platform of the soul. So what? Let me do that. And you stay fixed in the spiritual conception. You're protected. And you're doing the best service for them. Then the third one is a long subject. And that is, I call it detached caring. Care, but not on the platform of the body. Care deeply. Don't be impersonal and callous. Care deeply. But with detachment. Because they've got their own free will. They've got their own agenda going on. And the karma from their past activities and the network of social circumstances that got them really tied down to whatever the thing is that they're tied down to. By their own choices. And you can't pull the strings and like unravel all that. You're not Krishna. And even Krishna doesn't do it because he doesn't interfere with their free will choices. So you can care without attachment. Because as soon as you get attached, then you're in that same soup again. All bewildered and, you know, scratching your head and bumping into walls and not knowing what to do. Detached caring. And it's not just somebody that's over in India. It's your own family and your own friends and, you know, what's going on. Care very deeply with detachment. Detachment from trying to be the controller of the circumstances that you don't have control over. But Krishna is the controller, so be attached to Krishna. That's how you have detached caring. It's an art that a devotee needs to learn. All devotees. Because we all have those types of circumstances where we care about someone and they're entangled. Okay?
So, due to circumstances in life, we happen to have taken new services. So the volume of hearing and chanting, or at least maybe hearing, may not be same because of
circumstances.
So if you just have that, or rather try to keep the desire that I want to hear, and maybe the volume is less, is it still like a sincere attempt?
What the punchline is it still what? Yes, yes, yes. Let's take, you know, the young people who are here that have exams coming. The volume of demand on their time is going to increase. And, you know, what to do during that period of time, that the available time for hearing might shrink, but then right after the exam time comes vacation. So what goes into vacation is an extra increase of hearing. So in other words, there's plan A. That's when there isn't exams. Or, you know, at work or whatever's going on, something that's the increase. There's plan A. Then plan B is when there's that extra demand. I still have the desire to hear. I've got a commitment to hear. Circumstances are shrinking that available time. So looking at a longer stretch of time, when this is over, before it starts and when it's over, I'm going to increase quantitatively and qualitatively. And then you can go over, you know, a longer period of time, like a year. And within the year, I'm going to make a solid commitment to do some strong hearing and chanting and reading. That, you know, that's kind of like plan B or plan C. It's just, you know, the time management commonly is weekly. Within the course of the week, I'll do some, you know, so much of this and that and the other thing. And I have, you know, so much time for resting and eating and stuff. And then work and hearing and chantings, and that goes into my week. The weekends may have more of something and weekdays less of something. But you take the bigger unit, and then sometime during the year, I'm going to just really focus on, so, because there's this desire, this commitment to do so. And then you follow through. You don't let something else crowd it out. You say no to other things. I'm sorry. I'm going to do my hearing and chanting. Okay. Yes.
So, in the temple...
Here comes the microphone so the people can hear. Here you go.
So, doing temple activities, focusing on very specific things. So, I specifically have a tendency in competing, yes. I want to sing more RPs or I want to give more classes, for instance, and things like that, like the server, whatever. So, the tendency seems to be more of passion. And so, this passion and overwhelming these type of activities.
What to do. Better supplied in those activities than the other kind of passionate activities. So your question was, is it allowed? And the answer is, it's allowed. And while engaging according to that mode, you're monitoring, let me become more in the mode of goodness. And the mode of goodness may not even be in less quantitatively, but in a different mode, the same quantitatively. You follow? Like, same number of RTs and kirtans and things, but not in a passionate mode, but rather because that's my life, and that will, the motivation of one in the quality of goodness is, this will purify my existence. So that's the mode of goodness. And the contemplation like that reduces passion. So I may not quantitatively reduce, just enter into the same activity, the same volume of activity in a qualitatively different way. So let's say, you know, use another example, like on increasing chanting on Ekadasis or engaging in some vrata for Kartik or something. Something that's like extreme because mode of passion says extreme. Ardent endeavor is the mode of passion. So I'm engaging myself with ardent endeavor to increase, do more. Will that purify? It can purify, but better while doing that is, let me get to the point where, you know, the mode of goodness is formed. It's the qualitative way with which I observe some vrata for Kartik or for Ekadasi or something that will elevate my consciousness more and is sustainable. It will, you know, I'll be a more pleasant person to be around. I'll be serving the Vaishnavas better. For, you know, for example. Does that help? Okay. There was a hand up over here. Yes? Yeah. Go ahead. Go ahead.
Maharaj, there's a question online. It's from Shivkumar Prabhu. Question is, how to present to people and convince them that their conception of happiness is actually not happiness, but it leads to suffering?
How to do that depends on two things, primarily. Your own realization of that truth and the particular individual who is attached. So, on the second point, Narada Muni is a wonderful acharya. He shows that there is many, 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 many ways, depending upon the person. He applied himself differently according to different persons. So it's how to depends on your ability to gauge the audience. And, you know, where is it that they can take the next step? So meet them on their terms and then help them take a doable step. Like Magari was one thing. And Savalashvas and Haryashvas is another thing. And anyway, Narada is an expert gauge of knowing the audience. And then the other qualification is having that conviction oneself. Not in this immature way, as was discussed before, prematurely, immaturely rejecting things, but in a deeper sense of having a clear understanding of reality and illusion side by side. So,
in the slide that says Dhamma, Svena, Sada, Prabhupada said it's a field of material contamination. Maybe it's the next one, that probably gradually with the field of material consciousness. So what we have is more than it. At least what I have is more than it.
Okay.
That's how we understand the world.
This one?
No, the one before.
One before. One before.
Yeah, like this one.
Okay. Since, okay. And?
So how do we understand about age?
How do we understand about
the age of material consciousness?
I don't understand your question.
Oh, I'm just saying that what I have is more than it.
Okay.
I have a lot.
Okay, fine. And so what's your question? What do you do when you have a lot? That's your question?
Yeah. Or is it
you got a lot of work. Yesterday, Hari Vilas was in the kitchen with his apron, and he was there, I was told, from the afternoon. Because there were a lot of people coming, Thanksgiving, you know, in Hari Vilas, having a nice Thanksgiving dinner for everybody. So the kitchen was probably a mess. I mean, because there was a lot of preparation going on. And then this morning, it's less. So you need more people in there last night than you need for this morning. More effort when it's a big mess. And a sustained effort. And don't be impatient. Sustain enthusiasm to eradicate the contamination over a period of time. Don't expect, you know, one stroke and everything's gone. Sustained effort over time. That's the requirement. And in a mood of humility, this is a nice way to think. More than others, I have all this contamination. Therefore, my effort should be even greater. It's a mood of humility, not a mood of frustration. Oh, I'm so contaminated, what's the use? The opposite. I have more work to do than the next person. I have to apply myself with greater diligence. Because my heart is so And we're not competing against the other person. It's just, I have to make a greater effort and be more feelingly dependent upon Krishna, like that. Okay? Something else? Okay. Thank you very much. Śrīla Prabhupāda ki jaya.